Hello, and welcome to the very first podcast of Mongograms. And by very first, I mean second, because I evidently just recorded one that I had the wrong microphone set for. Yay! Anyway, my name is Christopher Mong, and I am a graduate student at Purdue University, and this is my very first podcast, my very first attempt to broadcast myself in an oral form. We'll see how it goes. Obviously, I am a great technical person, recording with the wrong microphone selected. But anyway, just a little bit about myself. Like I said, I am a graduate student. I've been a graduate student for what seems like a very long time, and what in actuality is a very long time. I got a bachelor's in English education from Purdue University, and then I went out to work for a little bit, not as a teacher. I worked in a bank, actually. And then I came to grad school, and I got a master's in educational technology at Purdue and decided to continue on with my PhD and what is now learning design and technology is what our department has been renamed. So I am in my last year, or a little over a year from now, I'm hoping. No, I'm not. I won't say that. I'm not going to say I'm hoping. A little over a year from now, I will graduate with a PhD. From Purdue and continue, you know, some real life somewhere. But until that time, I will be here working on my proposal and my dissertation. I have finished prelims, I'm ABD, all but dissertation, and this is where it's really tempting to stop, I think, for a lot of people before they get into their research. Maybe not tempting, but this is kind of where, I think this is where a lot of people end, you know. It's like, I've got all the classwork, I've got all the stuff. It doesn't make any logical sense to say, I'm going to stop. But then, you know, it's kind of like, you know, jobs come up, or you've been living like a grad student for so long that, you know, you see something like, oh my God, $45,000 a year. I want it, I need it, I must have it. But anyway. So, this is a podcast. Like I said, it's called Mongograms. And in this podcast, I plan to talk about various things that are on my mind. I really don't have a single subject I have planned. Really, I mean, a couple of areas are where I have a lot of experience, so I would expect to have more podcasts in that area, but grad school, college life in general, though maybe not college life, like party life, that's never been my cup of tea or mug of beer or however you want to say it. And also travel. Sometimes people see me as a prolific traveler. I'm not necessarily sure that's true, but I travel around a lot. I get around, we'll say it that way, and in strictly a travel sense. And I enjoy cruising, I enjoy going to new places, and my thing with travel is going as cheaply as possible. My opinion is that if I can save a buck doing something, you know, putting a little time in on research, then I can use that buck to go somewhere else later. So that's kind of my travel philosophy with that. So with that being said, I expect school and travel to be big pieces of what I will be talking about. Other than that, I'm sure other things will come into it, social life, politics, whatever. I'm not trying to go for a controversial bent, I'm just going to try to be myself, which is going to be fairly unassuming, I'm hoping, and also family-friendly in terms of language and descriptions. I'm not Kevin Smith, I'm not going to be able to pull off the profanity-laced tirades and dope-induced discussions that he tends to like to have on his podcasting networks. I love. Okay, maybe I think I've transitioned past love. I enjoy some of Kevin Smith's stuff, but that personality is not my personality. Which, hey, if you can't be yourself on your podcast, I mean, who should you be? That's my, you know, that's always been, my grandma told me that, I think. I mean, maybe that's a lie. Who knows? And yes, it's a lie. But anyway, so that is kind of the point of this podcast. I expect a vast listenership or audience of zero, but that's all right. I've had a blog, I've had a few blogs for a while, and, you know, it's just one of those things where you do it for yourself. You don't necessarily do it for other people. I mean, you actually have to do it with an audience in mind, true, but this is not something that's going to ever make me money. It's not something that ever is going to, garner me legions of fans. So if I can't do it and get something out of it for my personal, for my personal use and myself, then there wouldn't be any point in doing it. So I just hope, my goal is to talk about things in an entertaining way, to not stilt my radio voice too much. So, hey, Radioland, this is Chris coming, anything like that. So, I just want to be a real voice, talk about things that interest me, and maybe they interest some other people out there. Hopefully that's not, too noble of a goal. And so, along that lines, too, I'm not really planning on doing any editing to the podcast. I know that would probably be the professional way to do it, but the time involved and also, the amount of listeners, it doesn't seem to be worth it at this point to go back. Besides, I don't think you want to hear something that's been completely scripted out. This isn't a radio play. I may have a couple ideas of something I want to talk about, and it seems best just to let that come forth naturally as opposed to trying to make everything sound perfect. Or, not have any verbal miscues or whatever that would happen. So, with that being said, I was going to talk about my most recent trip, which was to New Orleans for a conference. And this was my third time in New Orleans. First actual stay, if that makes any sense. I can explain. The first time I went to New Orleans, I was a teenager of some sort. I can't give you the exact year. I suppose I could go look it up, but I don't care that much. And I was on a cruise ship, a Carnival ship, that stopped in New Orleans as a port of call. And it was, I remember a couple things about it. I was sick, and it was Christmas Eve. So, it was a very odd time to be in New Orleans. Lots of everything was closed, and I didn't care because I did not feel well. So, that was my first very hazy remembrance of New Orleans. The second, we went to New Orleans, and when I say we, I tend to travel a lot with my parents. So, when I say we, that's usually who I'm going to mean, unless I preface that with something else. We went to New Orleans to leave on a cruise. It was a Christmas cruise out of New Orleans. So again, December. But we're going to get in quite early, the day before the cruise. So, and, be able to do some stuff that day, stay the night in the hotel, get up the next day and do a couple other things, and then get on the cruise ship. So, that seemed like a better chance to see New Orleans. You know how you make those plans, and the airlines like to laugh and say, ha ha ha, that's what you thought. What actually happened was, we got up early, our flight got canceled to Chicago, we ended up flying standby, and instead of getting into New Orleans at 10:30 in the morning, we got in about 8 at night, which was a long, long, unhappy day. But yeah, we got to New Orleans, and I remember flying in. We were on some KLM plane, and this is this tiny, big plane, tiny, tiny seats. And I know I'm not the smallest guy in the world, or, you know, in the top 50% of the smallest guys in the world. And I'm in this tiny seat, and I'm just like, oh, this is so bad. And then the guy sits down next to me, and he's a New Orleans Saints football player. I could tell because of his clothes and because of his the playbook they had on him. I was just like, oh, could this be any worse? Thankfully that was, you know, only a couple hours flight, but still, wow, that was something I remember. Even that was probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. But anyway, so we didn't, you know, all the plans were busted. We didn't get to see much of New Orleans. We were just so exhausted by the time we got in that I think we went to Harrah's and then went back to our hotel and collapsed. And the next morning saw some things around Jackson Square, and that was it. So anyway, so in this trip, it was going to see more New Orleans. I ended up as I was going for a conference. It's the American Educational Research Association, AERA. Huge conference, like 10 to 20,000 people, depending upon the year. And I went for 3 nights. It was a Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night, which killed me. I was hoping for, you know, 2 nights or 1 night, just because it was mostly on my dime. But I had stuff to do on various days. So I flew in, and I was staying in the Hampton Inn. They call it French Quarter downtown. It was nowhere near the French Quarter. It was downtown. It was about a block. It's on Carondelet, I think, which was the street that kind of turns into Bourbon Street, if I kind of understand it. So it's about a block and a half from the party, you could say, and that block and a half was sometimes scary. But anyway, so flew on Continental. I had gotten their credit card, actually, because Continental is one of those airlines that if you have their credit card, they'll let you check a bag for free. So that seemed like worth it for a year. So I flew in, and it's kind of funny, you know, Continental. Well, as with a lot of airlines, you take a smaller plane from Indianapolis, which is where I fly out of, to their hub. So we took a 1 and 2, like a jet, a one seat on the left, 2 seats on the right, so a tiny, tiny little jet, and flew that to Houston, to their hub. So it's like a 2.5 hour flight to Houston, this tiny little plane, and get there, transfer over to the New Orleans flight, 757, 3 and 3, huge plane for like 40 minutes. I mean, it was nothing up and down, and you were there. So it was kind of funny, the size of the planes. I had booked the airport shuttle, or hotel shuttle. AERA recommended. I normally don't necessarily go with things the conference recommends, because it seems like those things tend to be more expensive. I don't know if that's how they get their cut or whatever, but in New Orleans, there weren't the usual shared ride places, like, you know, Super Shuttle or Mirrors or something like that. So this seemed like the best way for me to get to my hotel as a single traveler. You know, if you have two people, it's probably just as expensive to take a cab. I think it was something like a $33 set rate from the airport to the hotel. But I guess I could have planned and tried to, you know, meet someone or tried to grab people waiting in line for the shuttle and ask them to share a cab. But I didn't do that. So I do a shared ride. I don't have to worry about other people. And it's like $35 round trip, so to the hotel and back from the hotel a couple days later. So that seemed decent enough, and oh boy, that was a supreme nightmare in the sense that I already booked it, so I didn't have to wait in line to book the shuttle, but I went outside to where they told you to wait, and to get downtown, there was a line of about 50 people to get on shuttles to downtown. And they had buses. So I get there, one bus has basically already been filled, and then we stand outside under, you know, kind of underground waiting for the next bus to come, which comes maybe like 20 minutes later. And then that ended up, they decided not to give us that bus. They sent it somewhere else, and then we waited for another bus, maybe another 10 minutes. So I ended up waiting like 30 or 40 minutes outside, underground, in this nice underground area that, you know, collects all the fumes and carbon monoxide and everything, besides it being extremely warm outside, and me being in travel clothes from Indianapolis, so like jeans and a shirt, and you know, it was not the most pleasant experience in the world, where of course if I just gotten in a cab, I would have saved that time. But, you know, traveling alone, you know, if you want to save money, then, you know, so it comes down to what's your time worth, or can you afford it? In this case, I couldn't really afford to do a cab each way, so. Anyway, excuse me, finally got to the hotel, was, you know, on a bus of like 25 people, was thankfully the third stop. Got to the hotel, checked in, had a king room that was smoking. I didn't even know they had those anymore. And kind of, you know, like kind of old building, musty, plus like this smoke background that you can never get rid of. At the Hampton Inn downtown there. And then I met up with my friends, and we went and had dinner. And we went out to Bourbon Street on a Friday night. You know, it was just getting dark. And walked maybe 3 or 4 blocks on Bourbon Street and came back, and that was more than enough for me with the drunken people, the scantily clad ladies dancing in the windows or trying to get people to come in, images of naked ladies performing various acts on buildings and stuff. I mean, it was fairly, I mean, I've seen some stuff in my life. It was fairly risque. And I was incredibly surprised that people had strollers and had kids with them. I mean, we're talking, you know, maybe 8-9-year-old kids with them walking down this. Not to moralize on people, but really, what are you thinking? You know, it's one thing to say, oh, kids are going to learn, you know, we can't shelter your kids from stuff. You know, from life. That's true, but Bourbon Street is not life. I'll tell you that right now. I have never before seen as much depravity. I've been to Vegas quite a few times, or you know, maybe not quite a few, 3 or 4 times. I've been to Vegas. I have never seen the scene that I saw on Bourbon Street. This, you know, just a Friday night during Lent of all times. And the idea that someone would think, oh, this would be great for kids. I mean, I could see maybe you have your kids not think about it. You see that it seemed like you would turn off the street and get away and not continue to walk down the street sipping your drink. But, you know, I guess I don't have kids. People know what's best, I suppose. But it was just shocking. Anyway. So, that was my foray into Bourbon Street. It was more than enough for me. After that, it was kind of, I stuck to the, you know, around the conference. I did my presentation. It was a round table on some research that I had done, helped do. It was good presentation. I was glad I did it, and it seemed to go well. People asked good questions. And then I had some other things to do, some stuff. I work on a journal, so I had some editorial board stuff to do with that journal. And then it was time to come back. So the last day I went to the, I had a really late flight, so I went to the World War II Museum on Magazine Street. And that was really interesting. I'm kind of a history buff. I enjoy, like, you know, Band of Brothers and so it's interesting to see this stuff. They had some exhibits that were really neat. Some stuff was really hard to take. I mean, they had some exhibits that had people's like their Western Union telegrams informing someone that their son was dead, And that's just, that was rough. I mean, that was about, that was about the first thing I saw, and that about had me in tears just reading that. Just knowing that a piece of paper, you know, even to me, it means something. Like, I can try, you know, I'm almost to tears empathizing, but just imagine that that piece of paper ended someone else's world, essentially. I mean, it's just, I can imagine it, but then I can't as well, you know. It's like, it was really tough. There were some other things, too, where there were, you know, there were exhibits and some nice videos and things that, displays of weapons and armor and uniforms and packs and, you know, MREs and all that kind of stuff, so it was really interesting thing to see. And then the airport shuttle back to which was the usual. I was picked up about 10 minutes after they said they would. Was one of the last people, but still, you know, circled the city during rush hour for the next, you know, last three people to really just pack into that van, and then actually hit some sort of break, I guess, and got back to the airport during rush hour without many, you know, without much slowing down or stopping. But and then flew home, and I can tell you, I guess this is topical. I had a confrontation with a lady on the plane, which is somewhat interesting, or it's been on my mind at least. And that was we were on a flight from New Orleans to Atlanta on AirTran, and, you know, it was a late flight. I left New Orleans about 8 o'clock, so that's 9 o'clock, you know, Eastern, and it landed about 10:15. So, and we had some storms that we had to go around, but we landed on time. But that still left me with about a 30-minute layover, which I really didn't want to book this flight because of that. I mean, 30 minutes is nothing. 30 minutes in Atlanta is just, like, crazy. Especially if I was on Delta. Maybe AirTran's a little different, but 30 minutes, wow. However, it was the only flight I could afford to book on Monday. And, you know, if I stayed another day, that would be a lot of extra, you know, an extra $160 for a hotel, etc. So this was the flight I booked, and I booked it using, you know, like credit card points or something, so that way it didn't cost me out of pocket. But I had paid to choose my seat. Basically, you know, AirTran does this where they're trying to squeeze every last freaking penny out of you. So I bought my ticket, but if you want to choose your seat, you have to pay extra money to do that, or else you have to wait till the day of to do it. So, and, you know, I'm a big guy. I know I'm a big guy, so the last thing I want, like, I'm very self-conscious about being the big guy on an airplane, you know, and people having to sit next to me. I don't want to be obtrusive. I don't want to be in people's face. And, I mean, I'm not. It's not like I'm leaking under the armrests or anything like that, but still, you know, broad shoulders. So the last thing I want is an inside, or a middle seat. I mean, the last thing anyone wants is a middle seat, but if I'm in the middle seat, that means I typically got two people on either side of me thinking I'm intruding on their space, and then I feel like heck too in the middle. So it was something like $6 to choose my seat. So I chose an aisle seats for both my flights. Well, about as close as I could get, I think, was the 20th row without paying even more for, you know, extra legroom or premium seating or whatever, you know, BS they have for seating. So I had sat down, I'd taken my seat, and my bag was under my seat. I will not take a large carry-on. I will pay for a bag before I'll do that, just because I don't want to mess with it. I don't want to mess with the blood bowel sport that is trying to get a space in the overhead bin for everyone who doesn't want to pay a baggage fee. So I pay the bag fee and let them go at it. So anyway, we land on time. 30-minute connection. Incredibly tight connection. But, you know, everyone on this plane who is not staying in Atlanta, which is most of the people, have a tight connection. And, you know, we're talking, it's 10-something at night. There's one more plane going to whatever city you're going to, and you want to be on it. So people were trying to rush off this plane, which is understandable. But, you know, to me, there is a social pact on a plane. It's kind of a rules that are unspoken, but are just common decency. And one of those is, you deboard by order of the row you are in. Now, it's one thing if someone wants to let you pass them, or if someone says, hey, I'm not catching a connection, or I have 2 hours, and just kind of hangs in their row until people have cleared out a little bit. But you know, if you're in the back of the plane, that's, you know, it's an extra 5 minutes of you're going to be waiting for you to get off the plane. But that's kind of, you know, that if you want to pay extra to sit up front, then that's what you can do as opposed to sitting in the back. Well, we had a couple of ladies who believed that their connection was so tight that they should, that they could grab their stuff and try to run as far forward as they could to get off the plane sooner. So, of course, these are the people who end up behind, you know, right behind where my seat is in row 20. So, they, you know, there's probably 15 rows behind me. I'm not sure how many rows back they were, but there were at least a couple. So they're clogging up the aisle for all the people who want to stand up and get stuff out. And then the person beside me stands up to get his stuff out. I kind of unbuckle and stand, get my bag out from underneath the chair, but I'm not, you know, I'm not out in the aisle because it's already full of people getting their bags out. I didn't have a bag to get out. So the plane starts going, and then I hear people behind me talking. You know, they're like, oh, I'm just going to start crawling over people if these people can't get off fast enough. Well, you know, this is what happens. You're in the back of the plane. All these people have huge bags. You wait. That is just the way it is. And that's why you pick a closer seat to the front if you have a connection, which I had paid to do. Well, the guy, you know, the rows in front of us clear. The guy beside me, who was in the row, you know, beside me, he leaves. And this woman starts to push her way forward. I stick my arm out. I don't know if I just stuck it in front of her or if I grabbed her shoulder. And I said, you are going to wait until I leave. Which, and then I left. I didn't have to get up, but, you know, which evidently struck this woman the wrong way in the sense that I had called her out, that she was breaking the rules, and A, and B is that I had slowed her down. You know, considering it took me 10 seconds to get out of my seat, in the aisle with my bag, and start down the jetway. I mean, I wasn't hauling a bag out of the overhead, I wasn't doing anything, I was gone. So I proceed down the plane with this woman cussing me out about how rude I was, with all kinds of foul language that kind of belies or belittles anyone's idea of rudeness, in my opinion. You know, look at that fat guy up there, push me out of the way. You know, just include a lot of GDs and Fs and stuff like that in the middle of that, too. So, I'm off the plane, I'm up the jetway, she's still going at it, blah, 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 still going at it, still going at it, still going at it. And I get to, you know, I find out what gate I'm going to, I get to my gate, or I'm walking to my gate. She jogs in front of me, still going at me, and cuts me off and tries to trip me with her bag, and turns around and goes, oh, I'm effing sorry. That must have been really rude of me. At which point, you know, I'm still kind of hyped up. This is not how I normally act. You know, I don't, I notice when people do things they're not supposed to do, and sometimes it irritates me, but I normally don't take action. But in this case, I had a connection, just as she did. And she could tell me that she was in the aisle, so that gives her the right of way however she wants. That is not the way it works. At least in my mind. And, you know, her mind's different, and we're not going to convince anyone of something else. So we get to the gate. Of course, this lady is on the same connection, the same flight I'm going to Indianapolis. And, you know, again, it proves my point that she had no more right in terms of connections to pass me than I had. I was worried. If she was worried about her connection, you think I was worried about my connection enough to want to start letting people pass me in the row? But anyway. So, we get up there, and our flight is delayed for an hour. So, I make a mistake. And I'll readily admit this. I will admit when I make mistakes. And I make a comment to her. You know, this woman has just tried to trip me, has been riding me for the last 3 or 4 minutes. And I have been fairly passive about it, but I make a comment. That was something to the line effect of, it's a good thing we were in a real rush, huh? Well, as you can imagine, this just prolongs. She turns around, continues to cuss me out. At which point, again, I finally had the adrenaline has dropped a little bit. Not much, but a little bit, where a rational thought has entered, and I realized, A, we're delayed for who knows how long because there's a storm coming. And B, you know, I'm going to be stuck with this lady. And the other thing is that I'm never going to win this argument. Right? I mean, logic is obviously out the window. Passion is obviously out the window. And the worst thing that can happen, I come to this realization, is that I say something that really gets to her, and she comes at me. Right? So then, at that point, I'm a guy with a woman attacking me, and how, you know, I just don't see myself ever, quote-unquote, winning the situation. So I change tactics, and that is, she's still, she comes up to me and asks me where I'm sitting on that flight, because she wants to make sure she's not sitting in the same place. Again, insert a lot of F-words and so forth. And I tell her, and then she's still going at it. And I just look at her and say, are you done? Is it out of your system? I mean, this is over. Oh, it's far from over. It's far from over. Okay. And that's about the only only tact I could take. I mean, I could go nuclear and say something really bad. At which point, you know, I kind of lose any hearts and minds of people around me anyway, right? Because some of this is very public. And then the other thing is, I have to come to this realization that, A, I don't know this lady, and I have done what I thought was right. But continuing the sniping just lowers me to her level. And like I said, I made a mistake, and I said something that maybe continued this, so... I'll admit that, but it's just this point where I'm done. I'm through with it. And I'm still replaying it in my head, and I'm still hot, and I'm still thinking of things I could say just to, like, cut, you know. I'm going to use a wit, or I'm going to use something, I'm just going to cut her with words. But, again, what's the outcome? She's never going to say, wow, that was really witty. I'm going to be quiet now. And she's never going to say, oh, you were right. I'm going to leave you alone, right? It's only going to make this worse. So, I believe I took the right tact, eventually. Now, like I said, I made the one mistake. So, I kind of separated myself from her and didn't go looking for it anymore. An argument. When we finally boarded the plane, I didn't see her, thank goodness. I was talking with passengers around me, and, you know, it's kind of like I was trying to convince myself that I was still an okay person. Because I'm passive. I don't normally do stuff like that, but I was driven to stand up for myself or to do what I thought was right in this situation. And it's almost like if I can make sure other people still like me, then maybe I'm justifying it or something, or I'm not a horrible person. Anyway. So I get on the plane and don't see this woman, thank goodness, and we get down to, we get to Indy, the roughest plane ride I've been on in a really long time, going through the storm, like 15 minutes of like a roller coaster, up and down and sideways. But anyway, we get to Indy, and I'm around the baggage claim. I just know I'm going to see this woman again. So I take out my headphones and I put them on. Just that way I have cause to ignore her. So I don't really see her. So I'm like, oh, okay, maybe this will be turn out right. Okay. I get my bag. I walk outside to my shuttle to the parking lot that I go to. And she's on the same shuttle. Of course. She looks at me. Her eyes roll. I look at her and keep moving, look through her, and go into ignore mode. So again, yeah, the shuttle, of course, the shuttle is full. There's the last bench of seats in the back. One end is empty, although it's closest to her. The other end is more full, but I sit over there, and I just stare anywhere but around her for this 5-minute shuttle trip to the parking lot. And I don't know if she's cooled at this time or there was a family right in front of me with a small child and they were talking with this lady and she was trying to really make nice too, so I don't know if she was doing the same thing I was doing earlier. So we did not exchange any words, any more glances, anything like that. And that was how it ended. But That's something I keep playing through in my mind, and I'm over it, I think. But it's just, I come to the conclusion that travel, or especially airline travel nowadays, it just gets people up. You know, it gets your emotions up. You have to be there so early, and you have to, you know, go through security, and you have to do all this stuff. And it's just this draining. It's emotionally and it's also physically draining. And then you get, you know, you just want it over with. And so when you have this thought, you know, you make a connection, you worry you're going to miss it. You're like, you know, it's not just that you're going to miss the connection. It's like, oh my God, this travel is going to be longer. You know, especially that time, it's going to be over. You know, it's just going to keep extending. And so I think people get very emotional and they don't let logic or rationality rule them. They get ruled by, you know, very self-centered. This is me. I'm traveling. I need to look out for myself, which I think is very natural. But it's there comes a point where you infringe on what other people are trying to do too. I mean, it's the same way. I mean, look at. I don't know if you've ever done this, but look at people when they board a plane. When a plane's getting ready to board, people are hovering around the gate. They're hovering back into the aisleway. You know, they're blocking all the traffic in the aisleway, or, you know, in the hallway to get on that plane. Now, like I alluded to earlier, I mean, part of this may be because they need space for their huge overhead bag. But it was like that before we had the bag fees. It's just, I don't know, people feel like that once they're in their seat, they know it's their seat, and they're not going to be removed, or they just want to get settled. I'm not sure what it is, but people act nuts in airports. And I feel sorry for the airline people that have to deal with this. I mean, I've always thought it'd be an interesting psychological study of people traveling. Just those lines. I mean, Southwest has it right in this. In the sense that they make people line up before the flight. I think it, you know, it sounds irritating, but it gives order. Like, people accept that order because it makes them feel like they're part of something. You know, it's like they're getting ready to board. I mean, that's why Southwest can turn around like nothing. They have everyone ready. You know, you don't have to go and assign a seat. You just get an order of your boarding pass, and then you go. So, as opposed to, you know, everything else where they're trying to bored when you're not supposed to board, and trying to have excuses to board early, and I mean, it's just a pain. It's just a pain. I mean, you know, I get on a flight now, and especially if I don't, I mean, if I don't have anything for the overhead, then I don't really care when I board, because, you know, I don't need to fight for that spot. But, you know, I'll board at the end of my section, you know, they'll be boarding, like, rows 9 through 15 or something. I still have, you know, 8 rows that haven't boarded. And you get on the plane, and those rows are already mostly full of people who have forced their way on the plane early. So I just find it fascinating. I mean, it's just, like, I don't know, some sort of comfort thing, I'm guessing. I mean, that would be my hypothesis. But yeah, air travel's such a pain. And it's not made any better by all these fees and everything else that's been added. But yeah, people and emotions. I mean, I can tell this story. We were going to San Juan over Christmas this past year, and on a cruise. Well, we connected through Charlotte, so we were flying on US Air. And we made a long connection on purpose, and we like doing long connections in the winter just because we want to make sure we get out of Indianapolis. Like, if we can get someplace warmer, we have more confidence that the flights will be okay. So we don't like pushing those flights out of Indy. We want to get out of Indy as soon as possible. You know, I'm sure this will come back to bite us at some point, but that's what we feel more comfortable with. So we took an earlier flight out of Indy and had maybe a five-hour layover in Charlotte. But that was time, you know, to get lunch and kind of relax a little bit. We went to the gate that our flight would be eventually leaving out of, and there was at least one flight, I guess, that left out of that gate beforehand. And we had a front seat to this flight, in terms of watching, like, we were one of the seats facing where the podium was. So we were just observing people boarding the flight. We were looking at the size of people's carry-ons and how many they had. Well, the person working the podium for this particular flight was very insistent on enforcing the bag rule, which was the FAA says that you can have one large carry-on and one small carry-on that you can put underneath your seat, and that is all of the baggage you're allowed to have. So, yeah, this usually makes people, sometimes ladies more scramble because they're trying to fit their purse into their other bag, so that way they don't have three bags or something like that. But there was a gentleman who, you know, I formed an immediate opinion of in my mind because he was wearing a jacket and like a, I would say like a jazz type hat. Like, it's kind of a jaunty hat. And he had, you know, two bags and a backpack. And when this backpack has like shoes dangling off of it and all this kind of stuff. I mean, this stuff, you know, this person was trying to fly without paying money, obviously, and really should not have been. And so the lady called them on it. She said, "Sir, you know, you cannot board like that. You need to gate check something." Which threw this person into hysterics. "Oh, you can't make me gate check. I got here no problem. Yeah, I don't know why it's suddenly a problem," all this kind of stuff. And she was trying her best to help him and saying, "Well, we can maybe find a larger, like, a garbage bag or something. We can help you put stuff in. Just I cannot, you know, the FAA says I cannot allow you on the plane with too many carry-ons." And this went on, and this guy was animated, and he was swearing, and all this kind of stuff. And I think eventually he decided that he was going to check a bag. I think he just said that to get on the plane. So I was kind of, it's like, well, I guess he's checking. We're like, "Oh, is she letting them on? Oh, I don't know. I think he said he's going to check something or whatever." So anyway, he gets on the plane, or he goes down the jetway. And about 4 or 5 minutes later, everyone's boarded. The flight attendant comes off the jetway, goes up to the lady and says, "There is a passenger on board who says that he's not going to check a bag. He's cussing everyone out, just F-bombs and all this kind of stuff. And it's very unpleasant. And I want him gone. And the lady working the podium says, okay. She picks up the phone, calls a number, says a few words. And within a minute, there are two fairly large guys going down the jetway. And this is a jetway that was right attached to some other aisleways, you could tell, because a lot of employees will always be coming out of this jetway. And we never saw anyone come out, or security, but I can guarantee you that man was removed from the plane. And it's, I mean, again, you get to someone who was trying to get around the system, and that I don't want to pay for money, but I'm going to have all these carry-on bags. But also, someone very animated because, you know, traveling and stress and all that. But then this was someone who didn't know the rules of travel. And one of the major rules of travel is that you do not tick off the flight attendants, because they are, for all intents and purposes, the law on your plane. And so this was a gentleman, this was the day before Christmas Eve, who I have a feeling spent time in a small room in the Charlotte airport instead of going to see family or whatever he was leaving for, just because he could not control his mouth and control his temper. And I think that that's something that's always important to remember. Even if you are doing something, you know, if you're doing something, or if you think you're right, is that, especially in airports, you cannot act in a way that would make you seem like a risk or a threat. And it was something on my mind when this woman was yelling at me, as I was trying not to include it, you know, make it worse. But you know, you just can't act that way, and you have to just remember how you treat people, who, especially people who are doing their job, you know, they have rules that they're gonna get in trouble with if they let you violate, and someone else might have been lax about it. And, you know, so part of the problem comes with this, where some people enforce the rule, some people don't, because they don't want to put up with it, and then the people who are actually doing what they're supposed to do get more flack, because they are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing. But, you know, it's a hard job. And I'll tell you what, after that gate got sealed, my dad went up and talked to this lady, and he said, you know, I worked at a school. I know sometimes you just want to, you know, in your mind, you just see yourself throttling someone who, you know, you just get so upset. And you know you can't do it, but sometimes, you know, people get you so mad, and you did a really great job of handling it. And I hope you are, I'm sorry you had to go through it, and I hope you have a Merry Christmas. I mean, something like that. It's just, you know, remember, people. It's all about people, right? So, anyway, so that's my story. That's my very first podcast for Mongograms. I hope that if anyone has listened, I hope you found it at least a little bit interesting. And I'm sure I'll be picking up the mic again soon to try this again, assuming I can get this posted. So, again, my name is Christopher Mong, and I hope you have enjoyed my little monologue here. Have a great weekend, or a great day, whenever you listen to this. Bye.